Welcome to Exhibition, an Xbox podcast, episode number 81. My name is Samuel Adams, and today I am joined by Luke Lore, the Insipid Ghost, to talk all things Game Awards, lawsuits, as we've been talking about for the past 6 months or so, or actually more than that now. It's been January, February timeframe. So it's been quite the year, but I thought that considering how much has been going on, we'd be joined by somebody else with the analytical, news-based, phenomenal approach to how he does his podcast. So Luke, welcome back to the show once again, my friend.
Oh man, thank you. You are right. It has been an absolute just smorgasbord of topics to try and like keep and curate this week. So I am grateful to be on because I will be using this conversation to help me guide my own. There was so much to keep up with this week, man.
Yeah, it's been wild. I mean, from the beginning of the week where we had the FTC stuff, actually, even before that, we had the price hike on the first party Xbox news that came out. So we'll dig into that. And yeah, it's been a whirlwind of a week. But before we get into that, I always like to start off the show. I'm trying to be better about giving people the opportunity to let people know where they can find you first, because your show XCP is killer. You have tons of phenomenal interviews and you've been really putting out some awesome content in 2022.
Thank you, man. Yeah, 2022 has been nuts for me. I've had, my content is the Xbox Expansion Pass podcast. You can find it on all your podcast services, YouTube. You can find me on Twitter at Insipid Ghost. I think I hold those handles on Hive and Instagram as well, just in case. But yeah, 2022 for me has been nuts. I did kind of a look back at the stuff I've done, and it's been kind of a surreal elements, you know, Ed Freeze, Seamus Blackley, Lauren Lanning, Mike Chapman, among the many names that I've had a chance to talk to. It has been awesome, intimidating, and cool. So, you know, if you are an Xbox fan listening to this show and you enjoy my voice here, you're interested in more Xbox content, please give XCP a look, because I specialize in interviews and that's my jam. I have a cool one going up this Monday, Sam, where I interviewed a developer in the Ukraine. And the first time we tried to record it, an unscheduled power outage due to an attack shut down the interview. So we had to do it the next day. I was getting up at 5 a.m. for that one, just to talk to and figure out how do you make games in such a difficult circumstance. So, yeah, dude, it's wild, but cool, but fun, you know?
So, yeah. Yeah. No, you're my go-to guy when I'm waiting on the train. I take the train into work every week. And so I'm standing at the train station. I'm like, yeah, it's time for XCP. Let's check out what the new conversation is. So I've been keeping up with what's coming up on Twitter with the Ukrainian developer. So that's going to be an awesome conversation because, like you said, how do you even focus on creating a game in that atmosphere? So that'll be awesome dig into. But before we dive into the news of the week, what have you been playing? What you've been up to? What's been on the roster over the course of the past couple of weeks?
Oh, man. Okay. So there have been so many games that I've been enjoying over the last few weeks. I'd wrapped up some of the October titles that had come out, like Gotham Knights and such. And then I just recently finished God of War Ragnarok, which is a divisive but incredible video game. I have a lot of thoughts on it, but it was really an experience I'm glad that I had. Even though there are elements I didn't like a lot, there are elements that I absolutely adore and love. Really, really happy with that one. And then I've been on this weird kind of fun retro kick playing the old Sonic games, which was a passive interest when I was younger. But now, like, thanks to Sonic Origins, which is the collection of all the old Sonic titles. And then we had Sonic Mania a few years ago, checking out the Dreamcast titles again. And then thanks to Sonic Frontiers, I just got into it. I can't explain it. Sometimes when I get into something, I have to play everything as much as I get my hands on from that franchise. It happens with Star Wars and so many others. Yeah, I've been on a Sonic kick, man. Sonic Colors Ultimate and Frontiers. Just, I guess, learning how to play those games has been really fun. Learning the origins and the failures of that character and Sega. It's just been fun for me because I always knew about it. But Frontiers is a really fun game. I like the low stakes element of game, just video gamey games. After playing something like Ragnarok or some of the higher profile titles like Cyberpunk and such, it's nice to just have a video game feeling game. So that's been my jam over the past few weeks, and it's been a really fun time, if I'm being honest. I got Evil West on the docket coming up soon as well, that I need to really just put some time into, and I'm really loving the start of that. So yeah, man, a lot, but it's been a blast.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's funny you bring up gamey games, because I feel like you said a lot of these games are very in-depth, you know, especially the ones that we talk about in the podcasting community, where these are the 100-hour RPGs, like The Witcher 3 is getting its next-gen update that's coming out on the 14th. Yes. So I picked it up. I've never actually played The Witcher 3 all the way through.
Really?
Yeah. Really? So, yeah, so I picked up the complete edition when it was on sale on Black Friday for $10, and there I'm like, go. All right, this will be the free upgrade. I'll give it a shot. But I love going back to the gamey games. Tetris is always my game that I go back to, especially with Tetris Effect, where it's just, you just sit down, you know, you relax to the point that your eyes start going cross in different ways. And you're just like, oh, this is great. Just comfort, just comfort. But on my end, I've been, of course, keeping up with Halo Infinite. I'm still addicted to this game a year later, you know, even with the issues that it's had and the lack of content and everything. Okay. The winter update. So
I got to interrupt and ask a question. Because my buddies and I are on a Modern Warfare kick right now. You're a Battlefield guy, but we love Halo Infinite as well. We're just waiting, if I'm being honest, until we're kind of done with our Modern Warfare kick. How good is the content? Is it worth going back to sooner, or can we get back to it and just enjoy it when we get there?
So are you talking about Halo specifically?
Yeah, Halo specifically, because you're a Battlefield guy in terms of that type of shooter. We're Call of Duty people.
Right.
But we all love Halo.
Yep. So for Halo Infinite right now, I would say that the winter update, as everybody said, is kind of season 2.5. And I think that between the two new Forge maps that they put out and Empyrean, which is the Pit remake, and it currently has a 24/7 playlist going on in the game, there's enough there to warrant going back now. But to your point, I don't think it's ever going to say, oh, this content is stale, we missed the opportunity or anything like that. If you wait for season 3, you're totally going to be good with it. There's also the free winter update season pass, or the miniature event pass, if you will. So you've got 30 tiers that you can play through for free and earn a bunch of cool cosmetics. So there is reason to go back to it. And what I've been telling people is, if you enjoy the campaign and you want to go back and do some of that network campaign co-op or the mission replay, which is back, that's a really good opportunity there. So I think that there is reason to go back to it now, but you're also not going to be stunted if you choose to go back in March or April when season 3 eventually launches, whatever that actual date's going to be.
Awesome. Okay, cool. Because we are diehard Halo fans, but we played Infinite to death. I mean, I have so many days in that game. It was like we're enjoying the hype around Modern Warfare and Warzone and DMZ and stuff. So we're kind of in that realm at the moment.
Yeah. I've been touching a little bit of DMZ. I've been playing around with that a bit. I like how that feels. It's almost like it reminds me a bit of Warzone from Halo 5, where it's got the AI where you can kind of focus on that element of DMZ and kind of poke around and just do your regular shooting FPS fun. But it's also got the competitive nature to it, where all of a sudden you'll see somebody and you're like, oh, shit, that's not a robot. He's actually moving really well. So it adds a little bit of skill there. So that's cool to hear you guys are enjoying Modern Warfare, though. I played it for a couple of weeks and then I fell off. Just that's how I do with Call of Duty, it seems.
Were you doing it with a crew?
I was mainly playing solo. Whenever I was streaming on TikTok, a couple of people from the chat would jump in and play with me from time to time, but it was primarily solo. So I'm sure that if you have an experience with a squad, it's probably much more compelling to keep coming back to it.
Gotcha. Yeah, what I have found is that I was once really good at Call of Duty, like 2.0 plus KD, just really good at it. And the older I get, the less interested I am in like min-maxing my guns and my experience, and my reactions are just slower. So I am barely above one at any given time, but I'm having so much fun still. And that's a cool tribute to a game, I think.
Yeah, I think that Call of Duty has changed a lot in the way that it feels. And to your point about, you know, you brought up me playing Battlefield earlier. I used to be really good at Call of Duty, and I can still whip out some pretty good kill streaks. But I think that the feel of the game has changed away from that kind of classic arcade FPS back in the day. And it still has that, all of those elements in there today, but it's much more fast paced. It's much more based on how you build out your gun and the attachments you've got, the balance, you kind of tweak it. You know, the fact that you can go in, you've got the attachments, and then you can tweak the attachments, that's getting to a level of depth that is awesome for players that are totally invested in Call of Duty, and like that's their thing. They love that. But I also personally feel a little bit disadvantaged whenever I can't go in and I'm like, you know, back in old Call of Duty, like the original Modern Warfare 2, I knew the meta was like, you know, dual shotguns or whatever that, you know, combo was, or whatever the attachments are. But now there are so many intricate combos that it's kind of like lost that luster of the old school arcade FPS. So I think that's why I'm worse at the game that also very well could be a horrible excuse. So I totally understand that.
We're getting older, yeah. Sam.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. It's true. And I just don't have as much time to play. So these, you know, the kids that are in high school and they get off at 3 o'clock or whatever, and then they can come home and grind until 9 or 10 or 11 or later. Yeah, of course, I'm going to get, yeah, absolutely stomped. And I'm fine with that. I had my time in the limelight. Now it's time to pass that on to the next generation, you know. No. But speaking of Battlefield, though, 2042 mm-hmm. just got added to Game Pass. Mm-hmm. And I know there was a statement from the devs a couple of weeks ago where they said this is where we wanted the game to be when it launched. Mm-hmm. So now I consider this to be Battlefield is actually in a good spot. And I have been playing it to death over the course of the past 2 weeks since Season 3 launched. I bought the Battle Pass, mm-hmm. And I'm really, really enjoying it. So anybody that wants to check out an FPS that's not COD or Halo, definitely one to check out now, especially with the holidays coming up and some time off for a lot of people. I think it's a good opportunity to go back and check out a game that's like either free on Game Pass or $10. You can pick it up at GameStop for. I saw it for $8 earlier this week, and I'm like, for $8? Like, that's the price of a huge coffee from Starbucks. You can probably invest in that if it's like a 100+ hour game. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think Battlefield, it's travesty how it launched. I hate it for the team members there that were sincerely working hard on it. And I know that there are several that, well, I just happen to know one or two of them that were just cranking out on that one. But it's frustrating to see EA do this to another one of their shooters after they kind of nuked Titanfall 2's launch. And they're trying to compete. It's frustrating, but I'm really glad the game has recovered. And I hope the Game Pass edition plus the holiday brings some people back. But it's a crowded space for the elite first person shooters and multiplayer wise. It's a crowded space. You've got Apex, you've got Destiny, Call of Duty, Halo. There's one more, I believe, that I'm just losing at the moment. And it's just frustrating when you see so much effort put in and then it just all for naught. So I hope that this brings people back in the right way.
Yeah, I hope so, too. I think the future of Battlefield's bright. They brought back some industry veterans that have worked on Battlefield before, and they're kind of fleshing out this A team, if you will, of people that are going to try and redeem the franchise. Because I think that Battlefield 1 was the most recently good game. Like, community reception was awesome on 1. 5 was kind of mixed, but people still enjoyed it. 2042 launched in a horrendous state, and I get why people left, and I get why people still haven't come back, but I think the future is looking good. However, we got a quick look at the future from the Game Awards. And I know that you kind of were in and out of the Game Awards presentation live, and we've all had a chance to kind of see the news that came out of the show. What games from the announcements and the trailers and whatnot kind of caught your eye? Is there anything that stood out to you as something you're really looking forward to seeing more of, or that we learned about earlier and you saw more of at the show?
Oh, 100%. I actually was making a list while we were talking of all the stuff that I'm excited for. And, you know, hindsight, after the Game Awards, I was like, oh, this looks good. This is a good show. But I kind of had a migraine. I didn't really like stick with the show, and I went back and watched recaps. But then when I take a moment back and I look at the titles, I'm like, yo, there's a lot here that I want to play. Jedi Survivor is bar none, top of the list. I'm there. I have not yet told my wife that I spent $300 on the collector's edition.
Yikes.
Definitely in trouble for that one. Gonna have to pull out some extra hours at work to try and justify that. But yeah, Jedi Survivor looks great. I thought the presentation with Cal Kestis, you know, James or Cameron Monaghan walking out there and doing his thing, he looked comfortable in the role. This looks like truly his character. Dollars to Donuts, we see a live action element of him at some point, unless he's in Andor and I don't know it because I haven't watched it yet. But yeah, I am just so stoked with Jedi Survivor. And then I just made a full list, dude. I'm stoked for Crime Boss. I don't know why, but that game is speaking to me. And I think it's because it's this cool crime era title without the fluff that comes with Grand Theft Auto Online and the parody that's a little too much for me in Grand Theft Auto. And then I guess I'll just do 3 for the moment, but I can talk about more. Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League is a game I did not think that I would care about because I don't like playing as the villains. I like being the hero. And then when they did the Kevin Conroy bit and you find out that Batman is alive in this one, #, weird, it's the Arkhamverse, what's going on? I have a lot of questions and curiosities, so I'm there for Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League for sure. And Yeah, I mean, I'm just a DC fan. So those are three, but I could talk about so many more as you bring up yours as well.
Yeah, there are tons of big announcements. I do think that this is the biggest Game Awards slate of news that we've ever gotten, like as far as big announcements go. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind that I saw on no one's prediction list was Death Stranding 2. That came out of left field from, I didn't see that coming at this show. I think I'll say that at this show, at this point in time, because everybody's been talking about Overdose in relation to Kojima. So I didn't realize that he would potentially be having all of these projects going at one time, which again, it's a whole production studio. So I guess it makes sense. But Death Stranding 2 is one that looks just as weird as the first one. I have no idea what's even going on. I loved Death Stranding 1, played it to death. Couldn't tell you the point of the plot or what's going on if I tried. It's just wild out there. But another one that I'm looking forward to is definitely Diablo 4. I think that's one that is starting to really get the traction. We saw some positive press of it this week as a lot of people got previews and some hands-on time with the game, which is always good to see. And then also Idris Elba in Cyberpunk 2077, seeing that Phantom Liberty DLC. Those are three that really stood out to me on top of the ones that you mentioned as just being, you know, wild. Like it's just, it looks awesome, and I hope that it plays as good as it looks. Of course, Cyberpunk's had quite the ride, but now I do think it's at the point where a lot of people can justify saying, okay, this is the game where they wanted it to be, kind of like Battlefield 2042. Now is it the time to go back to it? So I have yet to dig back into Cyberpunk. I know you had a big stint on Cyberpunk a couple of months ago where you were playing that pretty religiously. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on the Phantom Liberty stuff. Are you diving back in?
Absolutely, I'm diving back in. I'm so glad that I waited on Cyberpunk because my buddy Ainsley Bowden is absolutely off his rocker when he says that Cyberpunk was a good game when it first launched. It was not. It was a disaster. They had to refund so many copies of that game. Despite making profit, they still refunded over a million copies of it because it was broken and a mess. But they've really turned it around. And a lot of the people that caused the issues in marketing and that were forcing the crunch and getting that game out the door when they did versus where it is now, a lot of those people have exited. So I'm really happy to support that Cyberpunk team. And going into Cyberpunk 2077, when I did, I got to play the best version of it to date. Very few bugs, though there were some, but it was optimized for Series X. I was enjoying myself. It was a blast. There's a really cool world there. It's a pretty empty world, which is kind of odd because it's so detailed. There's not a lot to do, but the quality of writing, the quality of acting was all there. And when I see that this is the last expansion for Cyberpunk 2077, but I know the foundation they've built, I'm excited to see what they're doing with Phantom Liberty. Bringing in Idris Elba is amazing. It's icing on the cake to what is likely to be an amazing gameplay experience. They're doing some cool stuff with police AI. This world has so much potential, and the gameplay really is quite good. I'm all there for the Cyberpunk expansion. It looks like it's going to be about a $30, $40 expansion, which, cool, rock on. Get a Game of the Year edition if you haven't played it. I'm happy to support this team now in its state because I feel like they've really turned it around. And CDPR is capable of making the best games ever made. Witcher 3, which I'm so excited for you to dive into, to me, that is among the top three best games ever made. On any given day, I would put that up against the best of the best and say, have a go. So, yeah, I'm stoked for 2077, for Phantom Liberties, for Phantom Liberty in 2077, because the potential is just so high. I'm also sad because they're abandoning the engine for something else, and I hope that doesn't delay content for the future game too far. They've got a lot of projects they're balancing.
Yeah.
I hope we get Cyberpunk sooner than later. And mind you, I'm the guy that I don't care about Cyberpunk as an aesthetic. I don't have an interest in Steam or Cyberpunk elements. That's not my thing. And I still loved my time with it. So,
yeah, I mean, I think that now CD Projekt Red has earned its stripes back once again, where it was the kind of, you know, heralded on a pedestal developer for a lot of people in the community. And then after Cyberpunk and coming off of The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt, people said, how the mighty have fallen is kind of the narrative of what it was. But now that they've really redeemed themselves and brought a lot of updates to the game, I think that it's in a really good spot. So I'll have to check that out. Once again, The Witcher 3, Cyberpunk, we were talking about big ass games earlier. Those are two massive experiences that hopefully I'll have some time for during the holidays. But definitely looking forward to Phantom Liberty. I think that it's a good move that it's next-gen exclusive as well, rather than being held back by Xbox One and PlayStation 4. And I think that we're seeing that with another expansion that was revealed during the Game Awards. The name of it slips my mind, but it was a next-gen exclusive expansion. So I think that devs are finally at the point where they're saying, all right, you know, Xbox One, PS4, it's been a good run. But even with the One X and the Pro, it just seems like if you're trying to make things fit on that hardware from now, actually in a month, it'll be 10 years since the PS4 and Xbox One launched. It's time to kind of move on from that. So I think that's a good move. And also, just to cap it off, like you said, Suicide Squad looking great. Glad to see Kevin Conroy with the final performance. But Hades 2 is one that was looking pretty good. So did you play Hades on Game Pass or in general?
Absolutely. Thought it was a great game. It was one of those games, much like Vampire Survivors, where you pick it up, you play one more run, but then you can put it down and go back to it like you've not left anything. There's a lot to enjoy in those kind of games, those video gamey games with consistent, persistent progression. I like that a lot. It takes a moment to understand, but I mean, I loved Hades. I'm absolutely going to check out Hades 2. These are the games that I will pick up, play for a while, put down, and then return to every now and again. But yeah, that is on my list right under Jedi Survivor. Absolutely stoked to see what Hades 2 brings to the table, because that was a fun game.
Yeah, good time. Also, you mentioned Vampire Survivors, absolutely robbed for Indie Game of the Year or the Debut Game of the Year, whichever one it was nominated for. But yeah. Vampire Survivors, my girlfriend has been addicted to it. Like on Discord, I have it where it shows my Xbox activity and people are like, dude, you're playing Vampire Survivors every minute of every day. And I say, no, that's not me. That's my girlfriend in the living room, because she is constantly grinding it. Now it's on mobile. I don't know what that'll look like for her. It's going to be wild. But yeah, Vampire Survivors has been a great ride for me, 100%. But out of curiosity, what other games were on your list or big announcements that caught your eye? I'm curious what else you jotted down.
Sure. Yo, absolutely. Also, Stray had no business at the Game Awards in any way, shape, or form.
Ooh, agreed. Hard agree.
So obnoxious to see that title there. Not because I want to wish ill will on the devs and such, because they made a game that they're very proud of and that it's clearly of high quality, but it felt like such an outlier that it was an albatross to the process, and that's really not what you want. And I think it actually hurts their position and embarrasses the Game Awards a bit to see that that title is there next to some of the others that could have been. Take that for what you will. Diablo 4 is on my list. I am excited for that one. It is not up the top three, but it's up there. And I'm not a Diablo fan. Like, I'm not like stoked for Diablo as a franchise, and I'm still excited for Diablo 4, which is cool. Judas, I have an interest in following. I don't actually care for BioShock greatly. Like, that wasn't one that I caught in its heyday, and I just never really have gone back at this point. And I'm excited to see what Kevin Levine can put together. I'm also weary, given how Callisto Protocol had us in Dead Space vibes, and then it launched. So there's a weird like hold back on getting excited for Judas, because the game looks fantastic based on what we saw. But so did Callisto. Is this a double A experience trying to be triple A? Are they going to have the scope together? Because Levine is super, super talented, as was Schofield for Callisto. So it's like, all right, what are we getting? But there's interest for sure. Street Fighter VI, absolutely stoked for that one. If only to see it return to Xbox. I'm excited for that element because I love Street Fighter as a franchise. Street Fighter 4 was my favorite, and I was sad when Street Fighter 5 didn't, so I never played it.
Yeah.
And then lastly, I think on my list was Hellboy.
And Oh, yeah.
I don't think the gameplay looked good. It looked slow and clunky, but the art style was neat. And how often do you get a Hellboy game? Very, very rarely. They exist, but they were never any good. So there are some highs with that franchise and that IP, and there are some low lows. So I'm interested in that one for sure. But yeah, I can't do anything but be excited for Crime Boss, Suicide Squad, and Jedi Survivor. Those are the three that just unable to turn down the hype for that.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think they're all good picks. I was also looking at the Hellboy game as well, The Web of Weird. I just looked up the actual name of it. But cool that it's in collaboration with Dark Horse Comics. I thought that was neat. But when I was looking at it, I was like, this is like if you made a third-person action game in the Sable art style. And I don't even know what that feels like. I have no idea what's coming, but I like the way it looks. So I'm also looking at that one. But it's really interesting you can bring up Judas. And I don't want to spend too much time on the topic of Ken Levine and like warranted, non-warranted excitement. But I think we've seen a trend over the past, I would say even 5 to 6 years, of big name developers that have totally earned recognition in the industry and earned the love they've got. But like Cliff Bleszinski and the situation that happened with, I think it was Lawbreakers is what the name of the game was, that came out. That was like a pretty big first person shooter. It was highly regarded, but failed pretty quickly. And then, like you said, with Glenn Schofield, Callisto Protocol was looking awesome, still looks visually impressive, but then it landed and it's kind of getting those middling reviews, which we'll talk about the review situation for 2022 more in a minute. And then we have Ken Levine, who is very well known for BioShock, and creating that world. And I'm a huge BioShock guy. Like, I loved 1, 2, never got around to playing BioShock Infinite, which I still get grilled for on the regular. But something that has totally earned respect in the industry. It's just, were these people the ones that were driving the success of those projects? Or was it that team at that moment in time that created something really, really special? And so I think that we're starting to see projects again, like Lawbreakers, like what we have with Callisto Protocol, like Judas that's coming up, that's kind of testing the merit of, okay, these are legends in the development community. Let's see it happen. Like, let's make some magic. So really interesting time, though, to see these people branching out and kind of figuring out this next career leap, going from what was before to what is now. I think it's really interesting.
Agree. Fully agree. And I sometimes playing the game isn't as much fun as following the game's journey. And I have a feeling for me, that's what Judas is going to be. I'm not really interested in playing it, but watching the reception, the development, hearing the comments, that is going to be what I enjoy most about that process. Maybe.
Yeah. And I think they're going to have a tough time with it because it looks like BioShock and it's kind of been unintentionally pitched as like a BioShock successor. I mean, you've got Ken Levine, you've got the whole hand looking plasma situation where the hands are glowing. So now people are like, oh, this is the spiritual successor in the same way the Callisto Protocol is the spiritual successor to Dead Space. But again, that's like saying, you know, here I am on a podcast. I am going to be the next Greg Miller at Kinda Funny, or I'm going to be the next, you know, whoever the big podcaster is in your personal life.
Right.
That's just such a big pair of shoes to fill when you're trying to make that happen. So I'm with you.
What he was doing.
I'm
sorry. I didn't mean to cut you. I'm sorry. He knew what he was doing in making that art style and making that design. They knew what they were doing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I think that if you pitch it, you better be ready to to give it out. You know, you got to be ready to really deliver on these promises you're making and the implications you're making, where you're like, ah, this kind of looks like BioShock. Well, better play like it. Otherwise, you're going to get grilled. So we'll see what happens with it. But we were talking about the, you know, Stray and these kind of like AA games, Evil West, you mentioned earlier. And we've seen a lot of conversation on Twitter. I know you and I have been in some conversations about this whole idea of swimming in sevens this year, where unexpectedly Callisto Protocol kind of in that 7 to 8 range is where a lot of people landed. Some as low as 5. Sonic Frontiers kind of again in that mid 7 to 8. I had another example, Gotham Knights. You know, you're a huge Gotham Knights guy. Yep. And again, 7 to 8. I also love Gotham Knights, and I've been kind of hanging out with these 7s and 8s. So what are your thoughts on this kind of AA level of experiences we've been getting this year? Do you think that these reviews are warranted? I just kind of want to get your thoughts on how this whole year has gone from Stray to all of these other games that are kind of hitting that mid-mark.
That's an interesting question. I'm not quite sure how to answer it, if I'm being honest. I think too many gamers get themselves caught up in only playing the best Metacritic game, award-winning game, and they've got to play only the best and then attack and put down anything that's not top-tier talent. And even with God of War Ragnarok, myself included, I'll spend time debating with friends, not necessarily in too much publicly because it gets misunderstood, but nitpicking at what's not good as opposed to celebrating what is. And there's so much fun to be had in those 7 categories, right? There's so much enjoyment to be had with the AA games because we celebrate indies, we celebrate the top tier AAA titles, but we sometimes forget that you can have an Evil West and just have a good old time with a smaller campaign, smaller scope, and there you go. When we spend time nitpicking the fruit physics in Halo Infinite or God of War, which, by the way, neither has good fruit physics, so terrible games, we miss out on the fun that's intended. And when you go to play a title like Evil West, you know what you're getting from the get-go. There is a level set when you get to the start screen that you just feel, all right, this is what I'm going to get. This is what I'm not going to get. Let's have a good time. And I think if more people would do that with any game and just realize that there is an intended level of fun and the developers created this game for you to have fun, where is that fun? And seek to find the fun as opposed to seek to find the flaws, I think we'd be a lot happier as an industry. I am having a blast with Sonic Frontiers. Not a perfect game. A lot of pop in, need some work there. Even with patches, it's getting way better. Gotham Knights, plenty of issues at launch, but like 60 hours in on that game. I believe I got all the achievements. I think I 1K'd that game. Had a good old ball, but man, those first few hours where I'm like, this isn't Arkham, I was really not having a good time. But once I let go and looked for the fun that the developers were creating for me, man, did I have a good time. Man, did I have fun. Played most of the game as Nightwing. Well, how often do you get a Nightwing game as a DC fan? How often do you get to play as Batgirl if that's your jam? And Robin if that's what you want? And there was a lot of fun to be had. And so I think the reason I work so hard to enjoy video games, swimming in sevens, double A's, whatever, is that there are some pillar experiences like Cyberpunk, The Witcher, God of War, Horizon. But there's so much else in between that if you're only playing the pillar titles, you're missing out. And I enjoy a variety of experiences. My gamer score is high, not because I will play the easy 1Ks, but because I play a lot of games. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, 100%. I think that you hit the nail on the head with it, that not every game has to be the 10 for it to earn the recognition and to earn your time. Mm-hmm. You know, something that I've seen a lot as I've been streaming more and kind of doing the live thing is people coming in. I play a lot of Halo Infinite, as we said. And so people come in and they're like, why are you playing this? You know, Call of Duty's out. God of War's out. Are you playing that? And so all of these big name games, which, again, totally deserve the accolades they've been getting. Those are all well and good, but like you said, as long as you're enjoying the game and you can find the fun in what you're playing, then that's what really matters. Because when you look back on any game that's been created, the ultimate goal is to give players an experience they enjoy. And I think there's fun to be had in every game that comes out. And I always go back to the thought, and I think that we've talked about this before on previous episodes, but every game that comes out, there is a high likelihood, just because of the volume of people that are playing games now, that that game is going to be somebody's favorite game or game of the year. Mm-hmm. Even if it wasn't your personal favorite or you hated it or whatever your reaction to it is, somebody out there absolutely loves it. And with the 7s out of 10s and the 8s out of 10s, those are good scores. I think that the review scores are very subjective in nature. You know, it's everybody's personal opinion at the end of the day. And so these reviewers that are getting paid to play these games and give their thoughts on them are doing just that, just giving their thoughts to help you consider as you plan how you spend your money. And so, you know, for me, Gotham Knights is one that I picked up on Black Friday and I have not finished it. I kind of put it down for a while just because life's been getting busy with the holidays and whatnot. But it's certainly one that has taken me by surprise on how much I'm enjoying the narrative of it. I think that the writing is fun and it's a little bit quirkier than I would expect from like a Batman Arkham game, which were pretty nitty and gritty. But Gotham Knights is definitely poking some fun here and there, making a couple of wise cracks, which is fun because, again, it's this next generation of heroes. They're kind of younger. They're not as hardened by the world yet. So it's cool to be able to see that kind of stuff kind of break through. And so as we look to next year, like we were talking about the Hellboy game, highly doubt that's going to be a 10, but that's okay. Yep. You know, like that's all well and good. That's fun. And so I think that having fun is obviously what we're all trying to do here. And so whatever experience gets you there, that's obviously the one that you need to go to. But go ahead.
What are your favorite games this year? Like that you
What I was getting ready to kind of crescendo into.
Okay.
You were seeing exactly where I was going. So with the Game Awards now kind of having wrapped up, we're talking about our personal games of the year. which is a very big thing to break down. And I'm guilty of having to actually go back and look at my achievements list. Like, what did I actually play this year? Yeah. I need to actually go back and figure out what I played. So, not to put you on the spot, kicking it back to you, what's your favorite game of the year?
Well, okay. So question about your standards here. Does this have to be a game that released in 2022?
So that's a really great question, because how do you classify it? I mean, when it comes down to games that I've played the most this year, these are all older games that aren't like, I think the number one game that I've probably spent the most time in this year is Halo Infinite. Mm-hmm. And it came out last year, but it really was, this was kind of the year of Halo coming into its own and kind of hitting its stride. But I think that for our personal purposes, I don't see any harm in opening it up to games that have come out in the past. Like, what did you spend the most time with this year? Or we could kind of tier it and put it to where, what's your favorite game that you've spent the most time in this year? And that's your personal game of the year. And then the best game of the year.
Okay. So spend the most time with, it's got to be Sea of Thieves. I know I put in just massive amounts of time. I'm over, I think I'm around 1,000 hours in that game.
Wow.
And a good chunk of that came in 2022. Solo with friends. There's a lot of updates to that title. I mean, that Sea of Thieves is a joy to play. It's the great, it can give you whatever you want. If you want super high intensity, you can actually find that in plenty of places there. Or if you want the lobby game where you're just hanging out with your buds and just relaxing, it can be that as well. 2077 Cyberpunk, really enjoyed my time with that game. It didn't come out this year, but for me it did. I used a lot of 2022 to go back and play older titles that I missed. I'd be remiss if I didn't point out that Shredder's Revenge and the Cowabunga Collection came out this year, and those gave me some wonderful moments. As flawed as it is, man, Gotham Knights, I love that title. Plenty of flaws, but man, I had fun. I was a superhero in Gotham again. And as a DC fan who is treated to the highs and lows of DC every year, you know, for every The Batman, I get a Wonder Woman 1984. And it's just like, I don't know. So as a DC fan, I thoroughly enjoyed that. God of War Ragnarok, fantastic game. Again, a lot of problems with it, but amazing. And Elden Ring, that's the one. It's one game of the year. It deserves game of the year. Elden Ring is a game that I was able to play as a non-Souls player. My Souls-like experiences that I've enjoyed have included Jedi Fallen Order and Lords of the Fallen. And that's it. I don't, maybe Darksiders 3 if you count that on a light level. But like, the easy style of Souls is what I can do for fun. But I was able to get in and learn Elden Ring. And have a good time with it. The timing was right for me to learn it. That game is masterclass. I think I have 150 hours to that one, and I'm done. I'm not going back unless there's a substantial expansion. The onboarding is awful. If you're new to Souls games, it's not good at teaching you. But if you can get past that, there was a great experience. So I guess those are my answers, with a comfortable shout out to Sonic Frontiers and Vampire Survivors. It's just gamey games I had a good time with. But I don't see one standout game apart from Elden Ring that stands above, and I respect God of War Ragnarok for that. But man, I struggle with these questions, because I want to shout out everything. And I haven't had a clear game of the year winner and since Red Dead 1 or Witcher 3, because I played God of War 2018 late. But I haven't had a clear game of the year stands above all, you know, God tier, S tier game since those two. And right now, Elden Ring, I think, would be the closest to that. But its onboarding is really bad for new players. So,
yeah, I did not get into Elden Ring. I've not played it at all. So that might be one that I pick up in the future. I'm just not a Souls guy. Every time I start playing it, like, there was that demo for like Wolong Fallen Dynasty, I think is what it's called, that's coming out next year. It's like a Souls game. And I played that immediately, just hated myself for how bad I was, did not enjoy the experience. I was done with it. But Elden Ring, I think, totally deserves game of the year just because of the impact it had on the industry in that snapshot moment in time. I mean, at that point, I was in between jobs, so I had like a 2-week period where I wasn't really focused on anything other than just content and just hanging out, having a good time watching and playing games. And everybody was infatuated with Elden Ring. So I think that that's a wonderful pick. And, you know, to your point about kind of having gone back in 2022 and played older games, I think that's one of the hidden blessings of like having not much Xbox activity on the year as a whole, that you get the opportunity to go back and dig into that backlog. Now, there aren't too many years you can have like that where in a row you'll say, okay, where's my new stuff? Like, I get that Xbox needs to be more active. And I'm looking forward to seeing 2023 with the big names. And we'll talk about that in just a second. But, you know, going back again, more Halo Infinite, checking out the Game Pass games that have been there, dabbled in some Skyrim for a hot minute, you know, getting back into these old classic experiences and just seeing what I've missed. But I think that for me personally, like the game I played the most this year is obviously, as I said, Halo Infinite. Shout out to Battlefield 2042. That's one I've been going back to as well. But the game that I think stood out to me after checking my achievements list and making sure that that was, in fact, this year and recently is A Plague Tale: Requiem. I really enjoyed Requiem a lot. I know that Kevin Ainsworth, is that the right his right name?
Muffinmon over at
Muffinmon. I have to make sure. I have to now. It's going to bother me.
Let's give Kevin a shout out. Yeah, give Kevin a shout out. Save Game Media and Project X Talk.
Yep.
This podcast.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Great Save Game Media and Project X Talk. I think did the name change for Project X Talk?
I don't think so. I don't know.
I'm not sure, but there he's always doing tons of stuff over there. I got Save the Game Media at Save Game Media on Twitter. They are making some great content over there. I've had the pleasure of talking to those gentlemen before, but A Plague Tale: Requiem is killer, like totally worth your time. Again, Game Pass game that was a big launch for this year. So that was definitely my standout experience, I think, from just the overall perception of, you know, a great AAA level experience that I think really deserves people's time and gets a little long in the tooth just as far as like how long the actual game is, but still a great time all around. So good stuff there. I'm looking forward to the future. And speaking of the Game Awards and speaking of the future, we saw basically no Xbox at this year's show as far as announcements go, teases. We saw 3 seconds of new Starfield gameplay. And as we kind of move into 2023, what are your thoughts on how Xbox is prepared to market these games, talk about these games, and kind of build up these releases? Because the two that we have on the roster labeled for 2023 are Starfield and Redfall, and Forza Motorsport, I believe, as well. So three big ones there. But again, no conversation, and it's basically middle of December. So what are your thoughts on this current situation?
Well, Xbox has failed in 2022, I think. I don't see any way around that. I think a lot of praise has to be given to the Forza Horizon team for a great expansion this year. I think a lot of praise has to be given to the recent updates in Halo Infinite that have delivered finally. But the majority of the year, I think, was a bust. And I'll actually condemn and put the PR team for Xbox on blast just a little bit for how poorly they spotlighted Halo, Forza Horizon, that expansion. They chose to spotlight As Dusk Falls instead. And that tells me that was to me, that's a huge mistake. They really dropped the ball in their first party content in 2022. They could have easily moved As Dusk Falls, which wasn't even a first party game, but they chose to treat it like one. They could have moved that a month. And given both the limelight, I will praise Xbox in putting out Pentiment, a game that is not for me in any way, shape, or form. I was very fortunate to get an early review code, and 10 minutes in, I was like, this isn't for me. I made it 30 minutes and I was done. It's just not for me, but a high quality, top tier game in its genre. And it's a game they allowed to be made next to other high profile games that people were expecting. They still said, hey, make your game, Josh, enjoy it. So I will praise them there. I will praise them for their work in Grounded, 15 million players. I'll praise Xbox for Sea of Thieves. They've bumped it pretty, I forget the number, but well over 20 million players, and great content coming to Sea of Thieves. They really did a great job with season 8. A lot of people are loving season 8. That game continues to chart and do well. As do a lot of Xbox first party, not just on the Xbox app, but in cloud and on Steam. So praise given where due, criticism where due. Game Awards specifically, the lack of anything there is a really hard miss, a really disappointing miss. And I hate it because the question has to be asked, does this relate to the Activision Blizzard deal? Are they trying to make their position look weaker? Is that a factor, or are we all just armchair analysts thinking that's it? Whatever the reason, Xbox fans were let down heavily at the Game Awards with nothing shown, and that's disappointing. We know a lot of what Xbox has coming. We know a lot. Yes, Redfall and Starfield for 2022. Yes, Forza Motorsport. But also we know about Fable. We know about Avowed. We know about Perfect Dark. We know about, oh gosh, I'm blanking on it. There's two others that we know about that are coming, and I'm just losing at this moment. Everwild, maybe. And gosh, there's one more. I'm sorry.
Indiana Jones is on the one.
Yep. Indiana Jones. Thank you. Yes. I think that was the other one that was kind of in my mind. That's a lot that we know that are all meant to be pretty high quality, high caliber stuff. And yet we saw nothing, which doesn't bode well. So questions have to be asked. Is Matt Booty doing a good job curating, talking to people? Phil Spencer, who I absolutely adore. And I love a lot of his team, but he looks like he's having a rough time. He didn't look healthy at the Game Awards. I don't know about if that was just me projecting, but like, he looks like he's been through the ringer. And how could you not be when you're flying around, going to DC, doing it? Like, it makes me worried, I guess you would say, from an optics perspective. I really do feel like Xbox has let its fans down in 2022. But, you know, as much as I criticize, I want to offer the praise to the winds. And their hardware continues to be great. Their services continue to be top tier. Stack Game Pass while you can, if you see any type of sale, because understandably, Microsoft is having to raise prices in 2023 on consoles and titles. I don't think that's a big deal. Sony has done it. We've seen AAA third parties do it. And I don't say Sony's done it as a bad thing. Like, I understand it. That's the reality of game and gaming. So I'm very let down as an Xbox fan by 2022. Asterix, still having a ball, still playing games, still enjoying it. It's only in the podcasting, analytical, take a step back sense that I can offer those critiques, right? I'm still having a blast. My main, despite having a PS5, my main remains my Xbox. I love that I can just jump on my phone and play cloud games and earn achievements. There's a lot that I love about it, but I think it's very fair to offer criticism and cite failures in this type of a conversation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think that you're right on the money with it. Where credit's due. I've had some awesome times on Xbox this year. I don't own a PlayStation 5 yet. I'm kind of holding out for the pro mid-tier like upgrade in between the generations. And then I'll go back and play God of War Ragnarok, Miles Morales, all of that good stuff that's come out for the PlayStation 5 exclusively. But I think looking back at Xbox at 2022, it has been a year of, once again, a pretty big miss for Xbox. I think that 2021 was strong. You know, we had a new Forza, we had a new Halo Infinite, and those were both conversations and like top games of the year for a ton of people, ton of groups. And it was a strong, strong year, especially as you celebrate 20 years of Halo. Like, you had a lot of celebratory moments for 2021. In 2022, it's like it almost felt like the period of time after a concert ends and everybody's going to their car, like the music stopped and now everybody's kind of like, oh, what now? You know, so there have been some great updates, like you said, but I'm genuinely concerned about these games that are coming in 2023. I think it very well could be an optics situation for this FTC lawsuit and the investigations that are going on, where they say, hey, you know, we'll pull it back. Like, there were rumors a couple of months ago of Sony pulling games from their show that were PlayStation exclusive to make it seem like they had less exclusives than they do. And all of these game companies at the end of the day are trying to prove their point in this argument that's going on right now. And so that could be the situation. But we've got to talk more about what's coming. And Aaron Greenberg kind of teased out that there is more in 2023. They're not ready to share it quite yet.
Do you believe him?
I mean, I think that there is more to share, but the question is, what is there more to share that we don't know about? Because right now, in 2023, like I said, we know Redfall, we know Starfield. I would not be surprised to see Starfield get kicked even further down the line, because we have seen a shocking lack of that game since the Xbox presentation earlier this year. So to see that moved to spring 2024, I do not think that's out of the realm of possibility. because Xbox is very focused on making sure that devs get the time that they need. But one of the biggest issues that I've had, you know, if we're airing grievances here, is that Xbox is really great about giving devs the time they need, ensuring that work-life balance where they can, and being great about, you know, being a solid publisher and having a really healthy collection of studios. Mm-hmm. But the games have to deliver, and there have to be games. Mm-hmm. You know, we can be kind of laid back, and that's great, and being able to work at a pace that's healthy and comfortable for everybody. But when these games come out, they've got to deliver. I think that Forza Horizon 5 delivered really well. I think that Pentiment, although it was on a smaller scale, delivered what it was intending to deliver. Mm-hmm. But how many Halo Infinites can you have before people start to say, oh, what's going on here? You know, where are all these features? Where are these promises? And I think that right now we've gotten a lot of promises and not a lot of games. I can't play promises. You know, that's what it comes down to. Like I'm waiting for Avowed. Give me Avowed. It's been years since this game was announced and still looking for it every day. Wake up, binoculars on the front porch, like trying to find this game, nowhere to be found. And so looking at Elder Scrolls 6, that's super far off. I don't even consider that something that we should be looking forward to right now. Like that's 2025 at the earliest, maybe.
No.
So there's just a lot of promises and I need fulfillment from it. And I think that it's either an optics thing for this court case that's going on, or it legitimately does, you know, bring a cause for concern. But you mentioned the $70 price hike, and we talked about it a little bit earlier in the show. But going forward, the big AAA games from Xbox Game Studios are going to be $70. If you're charging me $70, I need to see why I'm paying that amount. And of course, this brings more value to Game Pass at the end of the day. Like you said, I'm sure that price is going to go up in 2023. No doubt in my mind, because I've been saying for a while, you've been saying it as well, I'm sure, this doesn't add up mathematically. Like, I'm sure it's profitable. Phil Spencer said it's profitable. But how profitable is it really when you're making these big deals and you're still charging me $15 a month for access to over 1,000 games across cloud, console, and PC? I'm cool with paying more, but you gotta make it make sense for me. So give me the games and make that $70 price point make sense, because no one's complaining for the most part about spending $70 on God of War Ragnarok, because you look at this game and you're like, oh, this is killer. Like I got every dime out of that. I got the value that I want. But if you bring $70 and you throw day one Halo Infinite at people, I don't know. You know, I think there's more conversation around, this doesn't look that great. I think you saw it with Call of Duty Vanguard, where it was getting, you know, again, 7s out of 10s, kind of fell below expectations. People said, ooh, $70, not buying that. And it was one of the worst selling Call of Duties in history. Mm-hmm. So I think that people are more aware. I think that it's time to really up the ante and get these games out to people, but they've got to be good. I think that's really what it is. You've got to be good, and you've got to really blow people away, because that's a lot of money you're asking right there.
So I was thinking more and more, and I was jotting things down as we spoke, and as you spoke. And when I look at 2022, I know we mentioned Halo Infinite, Forza, and I mentioned Sea of Thieves, but Grounded, Pentiment, and Microsoft Flight Simulator, those are all super successful. But they don't speak to the core gamer that's excited for the $70 God of War experience, right? They're doing well. They should be praised, like top-tier titles. But like, you don't put Sea of Thieves or Grounded, Flight Sim next to a God of War. They're not meant to be compared. And in this space, and I think that the console sales perspective space, the thing that drives you to go buy a console, they don't do that. Like, you can play Grounded on PC or cloud. You can play Sea of Thieves PC cloud. You can play, and when you have your titles day and date in PC cloud, that's a great thing. I'm supportive of that. I see Sony's finally getting on board, but something about that Ghost of Tsushima, that Spider-Man, that Uncharted, that God of War tells you, hey, you need a console for this. And perhaps that's an intangible and I can't articulate why that is, but you can't get by on promises and your Grounded, Flight Sims, Sea of Thieves, Halo Infinites. You just can't get by on that forever. And that's why I think 2022 really did fail for the Xbox perspective. But then the promises. Here are the promises that we have, Sam. Redfall, Starfield, Forza Motorsport, Fable, Perfect Dark, Indiana Jones, Avowed, Everwild, State of Decay 3, Minecraft Legends. Those are your promises from first party right now. And then there's a lot of good work they've done in Day and Date for Game Pass, but you know about Atomic Heart and Stalker, if they're able to get that game out, which I don't know. And nobody can be upset about regardless. Like there's no world where you're allowed to be upset if Stalker doesn't come out. But like those are a lot of promises and very little delivery. And if I have a $500 console, if I have a $140 subscription or a $70 game or whatever, you know, a $200 controller, you better deliver on your first party. Otherwise, I could have those things in another first party, in another place. So that's the crux of it all. And I say this as a guy who bleeds green. I love Xbox. I love the team at Xbox. I love the vibe they put out. I appreciate Aaron Greenberg. I don't know if I believe him sometimes, but it's his job. And he's a genuinely good dude, right? Like, I don't know if I believe him about what's coming and if they've got something planned, but timing is everything. But also the dude was at Special Effect this past weekend. He works with Able Gamers. He works with Gamers Outreach. Like, there's a lot of good to go on. Their job is to sell us on these things. I struggle to balance. You asked for an analytical approach, and like these are all the factors that go into my mindset as I see them deliver promises. And tell you what, I'm there right away when we see these promises delivered. And I'm there now too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, you know, the Xbox team is doing some great work, but it all comes down to the games and it's time to see them. And like you listed off all of those games, and that's a great list of projects that are currently being worked on. But to your point about Sony and Ghost of Tsushima and, you know, God of War and your Uncharted and The Last of Us and stuff like that, how many of those games on that list could you say this is a Last of Us 2 level experience? This is a God of War Ragnarok level experience. And the only one that stands out to me is Fable, just because of the history that it's got with people. Mm-hmm. But even that's a stretch. I mean, we don't really have anything right now. Even Hellblade 2, in my mind, I correlate Hellblade that to 2. God of War Ragnarok. Like I correlate those two together for some reason. Maybe it's just like the vibe or whatever. You have these giant monsters and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I still don't know if that's going to be a one-to-one because we're talking about Sony Santa Monica. And then we're talking about who developed Hellblade 2? I forget. I'm sorry.
Ninja Theory.
So you've got these two studios. I still see Sony Santa Monica as just like an S-tier development team. And Ninja mm-hmm. Theory is still great. But I still think they're cutting their teeth and they're still putting things together in a bigger, more gratuitous way, if that's the right way to say that. Mm-hmm. So I just want to see more of the, you know, show me what you've got. Like we're talking about one of the biggest tech companies in the world funneling money into the gaming division. And of course, we've got this $69 billion acquisition that may or may not go through. We'll see what happens with that. But you've got the funds. Let's see what we can do here. Let's put together some cool stuff. But to wrap up the show, as I mentioned, there is the lawsuit that's currently going on. The FTC is challenging the acquisition. I don't want to spend a ton of time on it because I'm sure as a fellow Xbox creator, you are also tired of talking about the FTC and the, you know, the European Union and the investigations over on the other side of the world. So just high level, what are your thoughts on if this thing goes through or not? Do you think it's going to make it to the finish line?
I think it will make it to the finish line. Yes, I don't think the $1 trillion company starts out a process like this without a plan, right? I think they've got contingency plans, setups, and in truth, from the public facing side as a non-lawyer, there's a lot of hypocrisy, I think, being thrown about as Sony seems to be the only one truly fighting this deal publicly, and it feels very hypocritical in some of the things they're saying, like, oh, they might raise prices. You just rose prices. You know what I mean? Xbox is going to raise prices regardless of the deal because that's what's happening with the economies. But like, you're going to make it exclusive. We can't make a shooter like that. You just bought Bungie. You know what I mean? You're going to make it exclusive. We've had Minecraft for years, over a decade. You're still playing Minecraft. There's a lot of strangeness about it. And it feels like some of the opposition from the FTC and some of the senators that are coming out, it feels to me like they don't quite understand what they're talking about. They're just worried because they see Microsoft big tech and they're like, oh, this is a problem. When in fact, I don't think it is. The FTC and EU stuff is exhausting. I'm tired of hearing about it. Truth be told, Sam, there are no Activision Blizzard titles that I am diehard about. I love Call of Duty. I don't want to play a world of Call of Duty where it's not on PlayStation, because that hurts the user base, the fan base. That Microsoft wants this not for Call of Duty. They're making 10-year promises to Sony, to Nintendo, to Valve. Some of them are accepting it, some are not. Some are saying it's cool, we're ignoring it, we don't even care. But they're not doing it for Call of Duty. They're doing it to have the mobile reach, which ironically, there is in European commissions, there is a duopoly lawsuit against Google and Apple because they own so much of the App Store stuff and they need a third competitor. Enter Microsoft. If they're able to create an app competitor, they would be able to do it with Activision Blizzard's reach, or King's reach, I should say, which is the Candy Crush, etc., Call of Duty Mobile. It's not about Call of Duty. And so I'm just like, I don't want to think about games like this. This is not how I enjoy considering games. This was what I wanted to podcast about, and having to talk about it every week is exhausting. Yes, I think it goes through. Do I really care? No, I do not really care. I want more people to play Diablo. I think the game thrives if more people play it. I want more people to play Call of Duty. The game thrives if they play it. The only thing that I really am diehard, like, I hope Microsoft wins this because I want X or Y. I want better working conditions for Activision Blizzard employees. I want some of those IP to be resuscitated and some of those studios to be freed up to make more than just Call of Duty. Those are the reasons that I care that Microsoft would win this deal. But I don't care to see Call of Duty or so many of those other titles exclusive. I just don't. That's not me. More people playing games is better. Better working conditions. I genuinely think, Sam, that Sony has burned some bridges in terms of how they're handling this. And while Bobby Kotick is an asshat in every way, shape, and form, there are a lot of good people in Activision that Sony is not doing themselves any favors with. So let's say the deal doesn't go through. I doubt the next marketing deal goes to Sony. The next one, right? They'll honor all existings, but like, right. I don't think you helped yourself. I don't know.
Yeah, no. I think it's a very interesting situation, and it's by far the most interesting topic that I've seen since I've been podcasting, just because it's on such a different scale. But like you said, I'm tired of talking about it. At the end of the day, these games are, at least the ones we know about, getting made either way. Your Diablo, your Overwatch, your Call of Duty. Whether I pay $70 for them or they're included in Game Pass, they're still going to come to Xbox either way. It's going to be fine. I don't really think that people are considering how this doesn't really have any fundamental effect on Xbox players if it doesn't go through. But I'm very confident that Microsoft, being the company that it is, and already coming out and saying that they are, you know, supportive of unionization efforts. If that's what the employees want, then that's what they'll get. We'll be, you know, in conversation if that's the case. You know, being very pro employee and making sure that they are taking care of their people. I think that's something that Activision doesn't have right now. That's what you alluded to as well. And there have been tons of conversations about working conditions, time crunch and that kind of stuff on specific projects. Even Diablo 4 had a report this week about working, at that studio and how it's been very, very pressing since they started development and really are rounding out development. And so being able to have Microsoft come in and kind of reassess how they approach development of these projects, what they're working on, the talk of having a year off from Call of Duty next year, at least on the scale that it typically has been on. I think all of that sounds great. You know, really go in and reassess and look at the toolkit that you're actually buying. And you've got huge franchises that aren't going anywhere. But how can you reallocate some of these developers? Like, if you have thousands and thousands of devs around the world in dozens of studios, main and support, creating Call of Duty, how many of those people can be taken and put on a new Guitar Hero, a new Tony Hawk, any of these cooler, like you said, smaller, older franchises that have kind of been dormant for a while? What can be done with these, and how can we make cool stuff?
Mascots. We've got Spyro and Crash. I mean,
yeah,
there's so many cool things you could do there. Skylanders, like a digital Skylanders. How many families would love that to come back? You know?
Yeah, I think that there are tons of opportunities like that, especially when you look at the family friendly stuff. Like, you've got lots of cool IP there that have all been kind of forsaken because, Call of Duty, let's just all focus on making that. And don't get me wrong, I know it prints cash. I get it.
And it's good. It's fun this year.
Yeah, like Call of Duty, I'm not throwing a dig at it as a franchise at all, but there's more out there. There's more fish in the sea. You know, like I love going to, you know, let's say I like going to McDonald's. Don't want it every day of my life. Like sure. I'm ready for something else. Mm-hmm. And so I think that going forward, I also think that it's going to pass. And I think that there may be some concessions along the way. But the recent reports as early as this morning have been that, you know, the FTC has been throwing around that concessions were made for the ZeniMax acquisition a couple of years ago. The European Commission has fired back and said, no, there actually weren't. So there's a lot of like, they said this, no, we didn't, that kind of stuff going on. I think mm-hmm. that I don't think the FTC has a good case right now. And again, like you said, armchair expert, just a dude who plays games and checks Twitter. But from what I've seen, the FTC does not have a strong case. However, it's a big deal, sure. like monetarily, impact wise, it's big in every possible way. Look into it. Make sure it's on the up and up. And if there are justifiable concerns that are legitimate, then they should totally be looked into. Like, I have no problem with people taking their time. And I also think that what you said is accurate about this has taken a toll on the team at Xbox. Very well could be why, or at least a part of the reason why we haven't seen a lot of activity from them this year is that their attention is divided on a lot of different projects in this case and getting this stuff done. And I agree, Phil Spencer is looking a little worn down. I hope that he sticks it out for the long run and is able to reap the rewards of the efforts he's putting in, because he's a great Xbox leader. I mean, absolutely. You know. When you turn the ship around from the crash that, you know, it was in Xbox One generation, and you create, you know, a generation like we have now, that's something that should be applauded no matter who you are. Like, I've seen that from every corner of the internet. Phil Spencer is killing it in terms of righting the wrongs of Xbox One. So it's a very interesting time. And this 10-year Nintendo Valve deal is a big deal as well. I would hope that Sony is able to swallow their pride, come to the table and make it happen. But I agree. I think there are a lot of bridges that have been burned intentionally or unintentionally. And I think it's going to be a bad look for Sony when this is all said and done, whenever this deal goes through and they, you know, they end up looking like the 3-year-old crying in the Chuck E. Cheese corner. Like, you should have just had fun. You should have just been here. You should have signed the contract and had fun. But I don't know. It's weird. Yep.
Right with you. Right with you, man.
Well, I think we'll wrap it up there. I know we've been talking for about an hour now. It's been an awesome conversation. You know, we had a lot to dig through. We had the FTC stuff. We had the price hike. We had the Game Awards. But one more time, can you let the fine people know where they can find you online, Luke?
Absolutely. Yes, you can find me on Twitter at InsipidGhost. And of course, my content is the Xbox Expansion Pass, which you can find on all your podcast services, including YouTube. I've recently started making YouTube shorts, and I really enjoy those. I'm still finding my way with them. If I want to do comedic ones, in, you know, news ones, whatever it is, but I'm really having a good time with it. If you look forward to future XCP episodes this next week, by the time this goes live, Antonina Melnikova is a narrative lead at Frogwares, working on the next Sherlock Holmes title. They are based out of the Ukraine. And we had to contend in order to schedule our interview. I was up at 5 a.m. several mornings in a row, battling rolling blackouts and attacks with them, all while they were making a video game. And that was pretty wild and interesting to blend such a relaxed, like, we're talking about video games, and yet they're dealing with real world combat scenarios, which was really awful to have to hear about and know that to deal with. But it was cool. And so that's kind of the nature of my content. I try to have interviews with developers of all types on the show, and I hope anybody here is willing to check out XCP.
Yeah, totally. I highly recommend Luke's show. XCP is awesome, so give him a follow, give him a listen. But if you want to find me, I am Jampack Sam everywhere, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, all of the good stuff. You can follow Exhibition, an Xbox podcast, which you're listening to, so thanks for making it to the end of the show. And it's uploaded every Sunday at 10 a.m. Eastern time on Spotify, Apple Podcast, all of the podcast services. So add the show to your feed. I hope you enjoy. And if it's your first time, thanks again for listening. But we will talk to you soon, and keep on playing. We'll